As I look out in the world and I read the news, all I can see is these dividing walls. Higher, longer, thicker, over and over. And then something terrible happens, or magical, and the wall gets broken down. And we walk over the rubble of the wall for about 6 weeks. And then we start building the wall again. I remember right after September 11th, 2001, I was living in Denver. And Denver's an okay place. But it was really nice to be there. People were friendly, holding doors to one another, letting people in on traffic. It was great for 6 weeks. And then someone flipped the switch, and it went back to cutting people off, honking horns, hand gestures. It was the same, went back just the way it was. I mean, it starts innocently enough, right? I start building a wall to separate me from those people. A wall that separates us from them. Us Christians. Them Muslims. Us citizens. Those immigrants. Us conservatives. Them liberals. Us West Virginia fans. And those Duke fans. Us, them, us, them, us, them, over and over and on and on and on. But it seems, it's okay, right? I mean, I've got to protect myself. If there is an us, there has to be a them. It's logic. The problem is that we don't stop there. I don't stop there. We build more walls. So instead of building them this way, we're building them this way too. And this way. And this way. It becomes us Presbyterians, them Christians. Us citizens, them citizens. Us liberals, them liberals. And on and on. We keep building dividing walls. Our worlds, our definitions keep getting smaller and smaller until it's just me. Until anyone that thinks different, acts different, dresses different, believes different, has a different set of experiences, is no longer welcome to be on my side of the wall. You can actually see these walls. These are not metaphorical walls. Look at Israel and Palestine. There is a physical wall to separate Israelis from Palestinians. They say it's for protection, but this week, while bombs were falling on Tripoli, the Israeli Air Force dropped bombs on the Gaza Strip, killing 2 teenagers and injuring 17. In response, the Palestinians bombed and detonated a bomb in Jerusalem, killing a woman and injuring 30. I believe that that wall, like our walls, doesn't lead to protection, but leads to bitterness of those people on the other side. In Northern Ireland, walls were erected to keep Protestants and Catholics apart, to keep everyone safe. Now, it did help curtail some of the violence, but it certainly did not bring the two groups into one. One of my friends who served several years working with young people in Belfast, asked him, did the walls help? His answer was, well, sort of. They kind of toned down the violence, but they didn't get at the root issues. In the United States, we are building a wall on the border with Mexico. It hasn't curtailed illegal immigration. It hasn't helped Mexico with their own problems of crime. And it hasn't fixed the problem, or really any problem. It seems to have caused more problems than solving them. More death, more violence, more hatred, more fear, more bitterness. In his letter to the Ephesians, Paul is writing about an argument that had been going on for years in the early church. An argument that you can actually read about all throughout the New Testament. An argument between Peter and Paul. Now, I know what you're thinking. But Peter and Paul were arguing? They're both in the Bible and are on the same side. And to that I say, exactly. They are on the same side of the wall that Christ had broken down, that they built back up. The gist of this argument is who's in and who's out and how that happens. And it is a whole other series of sermons in and of itself. And because I'm sure that you don't want me to dig into that, we'll just leave that for another time. Christ broke down the dividing wall between us. Christ broke down the dividing walls between Jews and the Gentiles, between Paul and Peter, between you and me, between us and them. Christ broke down the dividing wall between us. The work is done. That doesn't make any sense. It's so unbelievable, the idea that there's no difference between you and me in the eyes of God, between us and them. That's just crazy. It's so unbelievable that we start to build our own walls. We build those walls that separate us from others who have hurt us, who have done something we disagree with, who have not done something we think they should do, who look different than us, and we build up these walls, close ourselves off, and sit and wait until they come around, or apologize, or do the thing we wanted them to do, or start thinking like us. We wait for them to make the first move. And then the bitterness sets in. It starts small. And the longer it goes without attention, it gets more and more ingrained. Stephen has often used the quote, "Anger not transformed is transmitted." Some of this anger and bitterness is not only in individuals, but also in communities and in societies. One of those places in our world is in the Middle East, specifically between Israelis and Palestinians. It seems as if there's no possible way that these two groups could ever be reconciled. The bitterness is so ingrained, there's little hope that forgiveness is ever possible. Then there's God. Pouring out God's Holy Spirit, God whose Son Jesus broke down the dividing wall, God who created in himself one new humanity in the place of two, thus making peace, that we might reconcile both groups to God in one body through the cross, putting a death to the hostility through it. Oftentimes, when those dividing walls get torn down, it's silent. It doesn't get the media attention that the construction gets. But the reconciliation that can occur through God, that binds us together as a community of believers, with all the faithful of every time and place, as we speak, our leaders are trying to put together a plan to bring our troops home. the same time, they're taking seriously their role in the rebuilding and stabilization of an area that is fraught with peril. There are people gravely concerned about what's going on in Libya. But every now and then, we see a flicker of hope from the Christ, from the light that came to this world. In Israel-Palestine, there are organizations working for reconciliation. I read about one of these groups, and I thought the story was appropriate, seeing as how we are in the midst of March Madness. ESPN.com writer and assistant professor of conflict resolution at BYU Hawaii, Chad Ford, tells us of a group in Israel-Palestine that is doing the hard work of reconciliation. A group called Playing for Peace, a group that's goal is to bridge divides in polarized communities through the game of basketball. PFP started work in Northern Ireland and in South Africa in 2001. Then launched its program in Israel in 2005. Since its inception, PFP has coached 12,000 10 to 14-year-old Catholic and Protestant children in integrated settings in Northern Ireland and taught basketball to 25,000 children in Durban, South Africa. In Northern Ireland and South Africa, basketball training is supplemented with programs that promote tolerance, ethnic sensitivity, community leadership training. In a 2005 study of the Bridging Divides program in South Africa, conducted by the Center for Development Support at the University of the Free State, found that the majority of children exposed to PFP expressed fewer racial stereotypes compared to non-PFP children. A larger portion of children who participated and PFP also were in favor of racial integration. The early conclusion is that PFP might have a winning model. The question is, could that work in Israel? Northern Ireland and South Africa are post-conflict societies. And Israel, as the news report, is hot. And it hasn't been this violent in years. This is what you'd expect to hear. Khalid, 14, is supposed to be kneeling in a mosque, praying to the east five times a day. He's from a gritty Palestinian neighborhood in East Jerusalem. At night, he sneaks out of the house and works by candlelight in a bombed-out factory, helping to build explosive devices for attacks on Israel, or maybe the United States. His life is a pallet of dust and dirt. He prays that Allah will avenge him, will give him back the home, the life, and the hope that his parents lost in 1967. Hate is supposed to consume him. When he graduates from school, he'll have no job, no prospects. His life is over before it begins. The script has been written. Just play the part and go to Allah in the blaze of fire and smoke, where 40 virgin brides await. You'd also expect it to be like this. Peeny, 14, is supposed to be going to school, getting a good Hebrew education. He's from Bet Shemesh, an Israeli Jew from a poor suburb west of Jerusalem. He'll serve the Israeli military for 2 years, then he'll go on to college. He'll become a doctor, maybe a lawyer. He prays at night that God will protect him, allow him to keep his home, the life, the hope that his parents achieved in 1967. Hate is supposed to consume him too. Someday he'll build a 3-bedroom house with a safe room in it. The walls of this room will be made of cinder block, 2 feet thick, and guarded by a steel door and an Uzi on the bookshelf. You don't expect it to be like this. Peeny dribbles the basketball through his legs in a dimly lit high school. His defender stumbles, literally faked out of his yarmulke. As Peeny penetrates to the basket, the defense collapses. Penny spins and finds Khalid with a perfect pass on the baseline. Khalid rises from the court. Shot glides off his hand and through a crooked, netless rim. His arm above his head as he falls away, he turns and smiles.